Season 5, Episode 1 of Fanicek. It's been a while. This is my first actual recording of 2024. My Season 4 finale came out January 2nd, but I had actually recorded it in late December. We were here in a snow day in Middle Tennessee, so I'm here with I've got a returning guest, and I'm excited about that. This season's going to be different. So as I've said before, and I said that in Season 4, I'm working on a writing project, so Season 5 is going to be kind of all over the place. But the first several episodes are going to be about one of my favorite 80s movies, a movie that I think is underrated. Its place in history has been shat upon, I think. It should be held in a higher regard, and that is the movie Teen Wolf, the 1985 Michael J. Fox classic. But I am here with a returning guest. Guest, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I've just taken the name of Chubby because
Chubby. So we haven't done this in a while where we pick. I have my guest pick a name. So he went with Chubby. I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. He's a great character. We'll talk about Chubby because I think one of the strengths of this movie is the cast for the most part. There's an actor I have an issue with.
There's a very big bone to pick, it sounds like.
But so here's the thing. So you haven't been on the show in a while. I asked you to go ahead and watch Teen Wolf. So you're in your late 30s. You've never seen Teen Wolf before. What'd you think?
Yeah, as I mentioned to you, we've had this issue before where I've watched some older movies, and I have a history of not watching some of the classics from the 80s and 90s. And when I do, I'm very underwhelmed. I actually took umbrage with your being underwhelmed with Sandlot in one of your previous episodes, mm-hmm. because that's a classic from my childhood that I actually did love. But it doesn't have the same gravitas whenever you watch it in your late 30s. But this was absolute trash, in my opinion. This was absolute trash. I'm really excited to hear you put it on a pedestal and claim why it should have a greater place in history, because I kind of feel like there was no redeeming quality of this movie, other than I love Michael J. Fox, but this is terrible.
Yeah, he's great in it. Okay, well, again, you're right. I mean, I grew up watching it, right? And to your point, I know you talk about The Sandlot. I actually remember where I was. I was in a cabin by myself for my 43rd birthday. So I went through this phase where for my birthdays, I wanted to go out and get these remote cabins by myself. This particular one, this would have been 2019, so it was my 43rd birthday. And this one, I didn't even have cell coverage. And they didn't have internet. They had nothing. So I thought that was great. Until in about hour 20 of this trip, I'm like, damn, I'm bored as motherfucker. Well, they did have a DVD player. And they had three DVDs. Well, actually, a box set and two DVDs. They had season like 4 of something of Friends. It's like just some random season of Friends. They had The Big Chill, which if you know that movie, here I am alone on my 43rd birthday. And they have The Big Chill, which is about kind of facing immortality and looking back at your high school and college friends and that kind of thing. So that was weird. And they had The Sandlot. So first I watched a couple of episodes of Friends because it happened to be that season where Jennifer Aniston was wearing the Princess Leia bikini.
So, yes.
So again, alone in a cabin. Let's find that episode. So I found that only because it was the picture I think was on the box or something. So yeah. I watched that. And then eventually I got to The Sandlot and I'm like, look, I've heard about this movie for years. I've heard that quote, "You're killing me, Smalls," no less than 5 million times. I don't know, man. I was just like, this isn't so great. I don't know. But again, I was 43 years old watching it for the first time. So
yeah. Yeah. The quote, I will give you credit. The quote is really insignificant in the movie. And sure. I'm not sure why that lasted through the times, but it is appropriate. I mean, how many times in your life does it seem like an appropriate thing to say about someone?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. I did enjoy the kid with the glasses and particularly the scene at the pool. That was great.
Yeah. Yeah, Winnie Peppercorn. He ended up marrying her. They had like 8 kids or whatever, right? Isn't that the end of the movie? They talk about Winnie Peppercorn.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. But anyway, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about Teen Wolf. So let's talk about this kind of the history of it. So, you know, Michael J. Fox at the time is a major star. You got to remember, so Family Ties is killing it. It's the number two. So this movie came out in 85. 1985, Family Ties is the second highest rated show on all of television. It's got a 30 share. So what that means is of all the people watching television, 30% of them were, in fact, on Sunday nights watching Family Ties. You don't get those kind of ratings today. The only show rated higher was The Cosby Show, which had a 33.7 share. But, I mean, so it's the number two show in all of television for the entire year. The following year, we'd get a bunch of Emmy nominations, including, I think, Outstanding Comedy Series. Michael J. Fox got Outstanding Actor in a Comedy Series. He didn't win, but he would ultimately win several Emmys and Golden Globes for the role. So this is a huge show. Now, so that's the number two show. The number one movie of all 1985, highest grossing film, is Back to the Future, right? Michael J. Fox. That came out a few months before Teen Wolf, although Teen Wolf was recorded recorded. It was filmed prior to Back to the Future. It came out after Back to the Future, probably for strategic reasons, right? Everyone knows that movie's produced by Spielberg, directed by Zemeckis. They know it's going to be a massive hit. So we'll let that come out, cement Michael J. Fox as a movie star, then we'll release Teen Wolf. So the story goes like this. Michael J. Fox, they wanted him for Back to the Future first. That was their primary pick. Spielberg and Zemeckis wanted him. Gary David Goldberg, who is the showrunner and creator of Family Ties, wouldn't let him out of his contract to do it. Not because he's a scumbag, but like it literally would have meant they were filming at the same time, right?
Yeah.
And although Family Ties is a huge hit, Michael J. Fox is the breakout star. He's the breakout star. The premise of the show, and this happens a lot on sitcoms, the premise of the show was originally supposed to be these two ex-hippies now raising kids in the 80s and the kids are into capitalism and all the opposite of the hippie stuff. But it all gets lost because the breakout star is Michael J. Fox. So in that part of the story is kind of lost to history. It's all about Michael J. Fox. You can also make an argument that Justine Bateman was really a big star at the time too. But he was a star, right? So that's that. So they cannot afford to film Family Ties without him. So they say no. So Back to the Future casts Eric Stoltz. And you can still see some. So you can go on YouTube and look up Eric Stoltz in Back to the Future. And there's still some scenes that are out there with Eric Stoltz. They start filming with Eric Stoltz. They're about 3 weeks in when they decide to scrap it. He just wasn't playing it funny. He can't do comedy. Stoltz is kind of a serious actor who's bringing more of a serious thing to it. So they made a big decision. It cost them millions of dollars. They said, look, we're 3 weeks in. Let's scrap it, throw out the footage. At this point, Michael J. Fox is done filming that current season of Family Ties. So like, go ahead and cast him so he gets it. At the same time, what's going on is Michael J. Fox is friends with Crispin Glover. So Crispin Glover, he played George McFly in Back to the Future. Friends with Michael J. Fox. They had done a TV movie together called High School USA. So they know each other. Teen Wolf is filmed down the street from George McFly's house in Back to the Future. So, you know, where like they're up on the tree and he falls out of the tree and all that. That's filmed down the street. Coincidentally, so was the house from Old School is right there as well. The house that, what's his face? Luke Wilson's living in that he uses the frat house. It's all right there.
Yeah.
So Michael J. Fox, who's a big TV star, he's filming Teen Wolf. His buddy Crispin Glover is filming the super cool, Spielberg Zemeckis time travel movie. Michael J. Fox is like, what the fuck am I doing with my career? Why am I filming this shit movie at $1 million budget? I'm playing a fucking werewolf. Crispin, who isn't that big a star, is in this crazy movie. And then it all kind of worked out that they fire Eric Stoltz, they bring in Michael J. Fox. And I'm guessing that's when they said, okay, let's hold off. Let's hold off on releasing Teen Wolf until Back to the Future comes out. And that's the history of that. And that happened to me once. I was in a movie called Strange Wilderness. I mean, I had a tiny part. It's ultimately cut out of it, although you can still see me in some of it. And it was filmed in 2005. It was a pile of shit. It was actually produced by Happy Madison, which is Sandler's company.
Yeah.
But one of the stars of that movie was an unknown Jonah Hill. Well, then Superbad comes out in 2007. Jonah Hill is a household name. That's when Strange Wilderness came out like 2 years later. So yeah, that's kind of a common thing. We'll shelve it until we have a reason to release it.
What I'm hearing is they knew Teen Wolf was garbage. They waited to ride on the coattails of Back to the Future. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Look, it's for $1 million budget that filmed in like 3 weeks. It's kind of not bad. Look. We'll get to that because I see your argument for garbage. I get it. Right. But here's the thing. It's nothing to sneeze at. It was the 27th highest grossing film in America that year. Now, there were 214 theatrical releases in 1985. Teen Wolf was 27th, and I've got a list. Let me pull it up here. I mean, it beat out some big movies. So when you look at Teen Wolf, check this out. It outperformed Rambo, First Blood. No, that's Back to the Future. Let me pull up Teen Wolf real quick, because there's some movies that have kicked the shit out of. Check this out. It outsold Amadeus. Amadeus, by the way, was the awards darling that year. I think it was nominated for like 11. Yeah, it had 11 Oscar nominations, 8 Oscar wins. That's Amadeus. Teen Wolf beat that. It also beat Desperately Seeking Susan. Desperately Seeking Susan was starring the arguably the most famous woman in the world at that point, Madonna, in her theatrical debut, her movie debut, Desperately Seeking Susan. So Teen Wolf beat that. It also stomped, what else did it beat? I've got this. It beat Weird Science, John Hughes' classic. Teen Wolf outperformed Weird Science. And most impressive to me, it beat Steven Spielberg's Color Purple, right? Michael J. Fox, dressed as a werewolf, beat The Color Purple, directed by Steven Spielberg. So you got to remember, it's nothing to sneeze at all. I mean, it was a hit movie, make no mistake. So my issue with it is I think it should have a bigger legacy. You think it's crap. Let's start to debate that. But before I do, let me go ahead and just read you the back of the VHS box. I love this, right? So okay. This is the back of the VHS Teen Wolf box. Michael J. Fox is red hot. The star of television's Family Ties and Back to the Future scores as Scott Howard, a teenager who yearns to be more than just a nice average guy, and he gets his wish. From deep within his personality, the teen wolf emerges. Hair, eyes that glow in the dark. He becomes super popular, the coolest wolf in town. It's fun-filled comedy proving that when Fox meets wolf, fur flies and laugh begins.
Oh my God.
Come on. Fox meets wolf. That's clever.
That is spectacular. Man. I have to ask you, as someone who worked at movie stores and looked at every single box cover and back, how frequent is it that in the synopsis of the movie, they mention the heavy hitting shows and movies that this actor has worked in? Like sometimes I can see like in a parentheses, like, you know, whatever. They're basically like, they are using that. They are leading with that. That is their only marketing tool is Michael J. Fox, Family Ties, Back to the Future.
No, for sure. I mean, you got to figure, you know, this started filming and casting in 1984. At that point, Family Ties isn't quite the hit. So yeah, these were all contracts that were signed before anyone knew, Michael J. Fox included, how big he was going to be. So yeah, they're definitely trying to capitalize on his success, for sure. But I mean, It was actually a common thing. I would say a lot of VHS. I mean, I remember my first week working at the video store. So new movies will come out. Don't quote me. I'm pretty sure new releases on VHS and then later DVD would come out on Tuesdays. That was like the big thing. So you go pick them up on Tuesday, they're released. Then Friday, that first weekend, is the big explosive people coming in to rent movies, right? And I remember my first week working at the video store, the big movie that came out that week was Sleeping with the Enemy, which was Julia Roberts' first movie after Pretty Woman. And you bet your ass it was all Pretty Woman, Pretty Woman. Now the Pretty Woman has this abusive – watch the Pretty Woman kill her abusive husband. You know, so yeah, I mean, that's a common trope. I mean, sure. I mean, yeah. Sure. But I mean, this one probably more than others. And yeah, it was usually B movies. Because also what would happen too is, like I said about Strange Wilderness, you'd see some B movie that got filmed and no one ever was going to release it until one of the stars became famous. There's a movie called – oh shit! I don't remember the. I want to say it's called Going Overboard, but let's just say that it's called Going Overboard, I think. And it was filmed like in the early '80s. This movie was a pile of shit, and the star was a very, very years away from being known, Adam Sandler. And then that came out. SNL's Adam Sandler. I'm sure he wishes that thing went away. It was like he played like some hack comic on a cruise ship or something. So that's a common thing. You know, you see some movies sitting on a shelf forever. And what I used to love too, this happened all the time too in video stores. It wasn't even like the lead of the movie. They filmed some movie where like the eighth lead in it later on became famous. So they released the movie with that person on the cover. You rent the movie, you're like, I'm 42 minutes into this film. Where's this fucking actor?
I haven't seen that person, yeah.
Yeah, or they re-release something, you know, like I think Mystic Pizza had like a whole new, speaking of Julia Roberts, Mystic Pizza had a whole new life because, you know, 2-3 years after filming it, Julia Roberts as Pretty Woman becomes a household name. So like, let's re-release Mystic Pizza and, you know, and make our money back on this piece of shit movie. And anyway, That's right. So at the time, it's nothing to sneeze at. It's starring one of the biggest stars in the world. You know, he's the on the number two show on television. He's the star of the number one movie of that year. It made money. It was the 27th highest gross, again, out of 214 films, but it's a legacy. It's not remembered well. And I think it's better than a lot of John Hughes movies. I think it's certainly better than Weird Science, which was proven. And I'm going to make the argument, I have no science to back this up. I think it's on TV more. It's an easier watch. When I'm flipping through HBO Showtime, I see Teen Wolf far more than I see Back to the Future movies. It's an easier watch. You got to be in the mood to watch Back to the Future, right? All right. What happened again? And wait, if he sees his prior self, it's a whole fucking thing. It's a thinking man's movie. But if you want to sit on the couch, kick your feet up and forget your worries, Teen Wolf. Teen Wolf's a movie. So what is the problem with it? You don't like it. You don't.
Yeah, I don't disagree with what you just said, which is it's so simple and basic that you can literally flip it on at any point in time, and you don't need a backstory. You don't need the names of the characters. You don't need anything, because there's my opinion and my problem with it is there's no continuity whatsoever with this movie. It's like, and it doesn't make sense. Like suspending disbelief of like a werewolf in a movie, which I'm totally fine with. No problem with that. Okay. It's great.
Apparently all the characters are too, including law enforcement and the government. Like no, like there's no ESPN camera showing up to this high school basketball game to see the werewolf.
No problems with any of that. Okay. It's like, it struck me initially. It was just like the flipping of allegiance to him as the werewolf that really threw me off. And so it was like, he turns into a werewolf in the first basketball game and people are freaked out, understandably, but it's a comedy and they're going to get around it. And you don't have to explain like how they emotionally walk themselves through accepting him as a werewolf. Like, I don't need all of that. Okay. But by the time he's dunking the ball, everyone loves him. Right. Which is fair. That's part of the shtick. Okay. Then they're like partying afterwards at like a diner and like carrying him in and like, okay, they've fully accepted this guy immediately. Right. Well, then this Pamela chick who he's trying to bang is all of a sudden like wants to bang a wolf, which is super weird to me. She's like telling him to get in this play and then like wouldn't give him the time of day. You've got Boof over here who's like into him. And then it's going to be that friend who watches him go after the wrong person for a long time. And you're like, oh, there's going to be a good story here. And they just like Boof just gets completely walked on and then later completely falls right back into him. She's playing basketball with his dad. The weirdest part of the whole movie for me. Boof playing basketball with his dad. So strange. And then in the end, Mick, the asshole boyfriend from private school, like talks shit to him and he punches him, I guess. He gets wolf on him and rips his shirt open. First off, that's the only attack he had, was to rip his shirt open. And people are like appalled. They're fucking appalled by this. Like it's the worst atrocity ever. And I'm just like, he's a fucking wolf. Like what? I don't know. Like, and all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, that was too far. I'm just like, I don't know. I thought it was insane. He's
so let's break it down. Because you and I,
hang on, he's bowling with the girl Pamela. He's got his hands on her ass the whole time, and Mick's down a few lanes. He's like, that's my girlfriend. And she's like, yeah, that's my boyfriend. But I'm over here grinding on you, and I banged you in the theater. And like, the whole thing was just so fucking messed up for me.
I didn't see her wearing a promise ring. She wasn't wearing a varsity jacket. I don't know that they were in a committed relationship. So let's break it down to category, story, cast. I think, so you're having issues with the story. And look, I'm not going to pose the argument that there aren't problems with this movie. There are, in fact, quite a few funny ones. But the story itself, to me, is timeless. First of all, it's got everything. Werewolves are timeless. I mean, werewolves have been around forever as far as storytelling, just like Dracula, mummies, and all that shit. So there's that aspect to it. It's a sports movie. It's a come-from-behind sports movie. And you're a sports guy. Hell, you play basketball. You should appreciate 5'5". He has to jump when he takes free throws, which drives me fucking crazy.
That did bother me. I agree.
My feet haven't left the floor taking a free throw since I was about 9.
That was one of the first things I laughed at. Was like, why is he jumping and pushing so hard to get the ball from the free throw line?
But the story itself, I'm going to break this down for you. It's timeless. Check this out. This is a guy who's telling the world, I'm tired of being average. I want more. Does that not sound like a 1976 in Philadelphia, Rocky Balboa? I'm tired of being a loser. I want more. You know, maybe I can't beat Apollo Creed, but when that final bell rings, I will still be standing. That's what he told Adrian the night before. I'm tired. I'm tired of being laughed at. I'm tired of being a loser. That's Scott Howard. He doesn't want a $6 haircut anymore. He wants more. I think it's a timeless story.
There are like very small components of great movies in this movie. Very small. And I'll just leave it at that. They're few and far between.
Okay. Well, first of all, I love the Rocky, because actually the song, I believe, is supposed to be used in one of the Rockies. The song at the end, win in the end. We're gonna win in the end. That was in the running to be in one of the Rocky films, probably Rocky 3 or 4 at this point. I don't recall. Just like, you know, the song from Karate Kid. You're the best. That was actually written for Rocky 3. And then Stallone, when he heard Eye of the Tiger, scrapped it and went with Eye of the Tiger. But that was written. And if you listen to the lyrics of You're the Best, it doesn't apply to Karate Kid. It's like history repeats itself. Try and you'll succeed. But this, I'm just saying, it's in the Rocky world in that it features a song that was in the running to be in a Rocky movie. But it's also, I mean, come on. this kid winning the basketball game in the end is just as easy for me to believe as fucking Daniel LaRusso beating Johnny at the end of Karate Kid. Johnny's been in karate his whole fucking life. This kid takes it for 3 weeks, learns the crane kick, and he beats all of Cobra Kai, and culminating in beating Johnny Lawrence. Johnny Lawrence would have whooped his ass, especially with that crane kick.
Listen, I've already said suspension of disbelief. I'm fine with the fact that he's a werewolf in general. If you want to talk that was factually possible, like we're done. We're done right there, okay? But so get over that part, right?
Okay.
So then if he's going to be a great basketball player, that's totally fine. He should be. He's a werewolf. Like, I'm sure he has supernatural skills. Totally fine.
So let's go through the story. Let's identify issues, and I'll try to pose an argument, or I'll just laugh with you. It starts with the basketball. One thing that I noticed, man, Chubby, and I want you to – where are they playing this game, in a sauna? Have you ever seen so much sweat in a basketball game?
The most sweat ever. And also, Chubby, to be fair, is a 50-year-old man on a high school basketball team.
First of all, the whole fucking you know what's funny? I am now 2 years younger than the dad was in this movie. That scares me. Like, that, I always thought of him as an old man. I looked up his age. And when that movie came out, he is 2 years older than I am right now, which frightens me. Yeah. Chubby's old. You're right. Mick looks like he's about 38 and has a parole officer.
Yeah. Mick has been pinched for statutory, I believe. He's been with some underage ladies.
He
no
should
doubt.
Be hanging out at high schools. So, yeah, the movie opens with a basketball scene. Clearly, Michael J. Fox has never played basketball. I mean, he has to look down when he's dribbling. But I think he's such a great physical actor. I've always liked him as a physical actor. You'll notice, too, there's scenes. He did this a lot in Family Ties. He always gives himself what they call it in acting, not that I'm some kind of an expert, they call it giving yourself business. Meaning, instead of like walking into the room and saying hi to your wife, it's walking into the room while you're tying your tie, putting on your cufflinks, saying hi to your wife. It's called giving yourself business, giving yourself shit to do. He's always doing that. In Family Ties, he's always getting orange juice. And you'll notice, even in this movie, he walks in the hardware store. He scoops up some popcorn while he's talking to his dad. He's always got things going on. So even though he's a shit basketball player, and most of them are, I like him in it. I think he's such a great physical actor. I always thought he was a fun physical actor. My biggest question is, the team's awful. The coach is checked out. We'll talk about the cast. We'll get to the coach in a second. Why is Scott Howard on the basketball team? He never expresses any interest at all in playing basketball. They're clearly getting humiliated on a regular basis. Why is he even doing this?
Yeah, well, he tried to quit at the end too, and then they're like, "We just need you to be the wolf," and he's like, "I'm not going to do it." It's also stupid. I don't know. I'm not going to go on that tirade again. But I think that's just a small school. I think there aren't enough people to field a team. I can relate to that, where you like everyone's just an athlete because you have to be. You need people, and he's a guy.
So he plays the game, and afterwards he's itchy, he's starting to get the hair. I feel like it's also a metaphor for our changing bodies.
we're growing. It's a classic adolescent tale. I think that's what he thought.
It's a classic tale. It involves bullies. It involves sports. It involves werewolves. It involves puberty. come on, this is a classic '80s. The story's timeless. It's a classic '80s movie.
It involves boning previously unattainable chicks whenever you get the opportunity.
Like Daniel LaRusso could have gotten Elizabeth Shue's character. Come on.
Classic.
That's a staple of all '80s movies. A nerdy guy gets the girl. Every '80s movie involves some guy getting a girl he should never have gotten. Right. Yep. And then the 90s version of that was fat guys with girls they never should have gotten. Every 90s sitcom stars a fat guy whose wife should never have married him. King of Queens.
That's true.
According to Jim, Ray Romano wasn't fat, but Patricia Heaton shouldn't have been married to him.
It also included girls transforming by taking glasses off and all of a sudden being supermodels.
Yeah.
If you remember She's All That, for instance. First memory I have of that kind of that ilk was she's been ugly the whole time. So ugly. Take her glasses off and put a dress on her. Oh my God, she's a bombshell.
Yeah. I think Boof could have used a little bit of that. We'll get to the cast. I feel like Boof, there was no – anyway, Boof's an issue for me. Yeah. So there are issues. What do you think of that party scene?
In the beginning or at the end? At the dance at the end?
No, the party, the house party, gets where Scott gets a keg of beer. They go to the party. Styles is running the thing like he's Hugh Hefner.
Yeah.
I mean, they're pouring Jello down a girl's shot. There's one couple in undies who are wrestling in whipped cream the entire time.
There's a 2 minutes in heaven, I guess, in the closet with Boof. I don't know. Look like a classic party to me. I've been in a lot of those. Look just like all my parties.
You've been in parties like that? I've never been in a party like that.
Not actually, Jello.
I was going to say, I've never been in a party where a hot girl willingly allows the fat guy to pour Jell-O down her shirt and stick his face in her breasts. I mean,
that reminds me of Billy Bob from Varsity Blues. It reminds me of that same. He has the same reputation where he's so fat and like he's not a threat. You know, he's like not a guy trying to get your boobs. He's just a fat guy.
Every one of those guys, you're right, that Billy Bob's same character. Every one of those guys grows up, I think, and fucking hates themselves, eventually kills themselves. Because it's funny. You know, it's Chris Farley, right? David Spade tells stories about Chris Farley. And he's like, you know, Chris, coming up at Second City and then at SNL, he was a fat guy who would take his shirt off and do all the fat guy things. But it reached a point where he didn't like it anymore. He didn't like the joke anymore. It's kind of like, and Spade's analogy was, it's like the Skinamax actress, right? She's up and coming. She takes her shirt off in a few shitty movies. Then at some point, she's tired. She doesn't want to be that girl anymore. And I feel like Chris Farley had that. And I feel like all these guys, Billy Bob, that character, they didn't make a sequel to Varsity Blues, but I'm guarantee you it ends with him putting a rifle in his fucking mouth. Chubby, same thing. Chubby blows his fucking brains out, I promise you.
Yeah. Billy Bob did it in the movie. He was going to do it. Had a rifle in his mouth. So, yeah.
That's right. That's right. And I grew up a kid. I remember one kid in particular in high school. I'm not going to say his name. Not that anyone from my high school listens to this podcast. But he was the fat guy, and everyone called him the fat guy. He was fun being the fat guy. And then in senior year, a lot of them went to Cancun. Senior year in high school, which I thought was a bit much. There was no way I was going to Cancun senior high school. But he came back with a tattoo. Right. Like that was his way of being cool. He got a Tasmanian devil tattoo on his arm. So now he's a fat guy and also the fat crazy guy. I got a tattoo. Yeah. I promise you, that guy is living somewhere in a trailer fucking hating himself. There's no way he's happy.
Because you're just appealing to the masses at that point, you know.
Yeah.
You've just embraced the shtick because it may be and it shouldn't be, but it may have been his only path to popularity, and you just kind of go with it. And unfortunately, you become something you're not even really in the first place. On this episode of Family Ties, we're going to talk about why fat people deserve to be friends too.
You know, Family Ties had some epic messaging. Very special episodes. Yeah. And one of them included a two-parter where Tom Hanks played the uncle, and he was an alcoholic. And it got so bad that they had to hide all the alcohol, and he was drinking, if I'm not mistaken, vanilla extract. And and Alex Keaton, Michael J. Fox's character, idolizes his uncle. And his uncle, I think, had been like a big shot on Wall Street, lost everything, lost his job, alcoholism. And like Michael J. Fox goes to like take away the alcohol, and Tom Hanks hits him, slaps him, knocks him on the ground. Like it was pretty intense, but yeah. But just, anyway, you said very special episode. Man, Michael J. Fox was no stranger to the very special episode. There was also a big episode where a friend of his got killed. I remember that. There were a lot of those. The 80s was big on very special episodes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And Family Ties was no stranger.
There you go.
Anyway, okay, so the party scene I thought was an issue. So now he's playing basketball and he becomes the wolf in front of everyone. He's already been the wolf in front of his dad. I thought that was a nice surprise. I remember as a kid not seeing the dad also being a wolf. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, yeah, that actually was – I did think that was handled well. And that was a lone bright spot.
Yeah, I thought that was well. So now this is an issue. He's in the game. It's clearly a jump ball, right? They're fighting for the ball. And he wolfs out, becomes a wolf in front of everybody. It takes everyone, by my math, about 41 seconds to accept this fact and continue on the game.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. That's one of the biggest, one of the many. There are several issues like this, but that's one of them where, again, I get you have to just move past it at some point, but there is no reconciliation of this whatsoever.
There's not one news outlet besides the high school paper that's interested in this.
Nope. As soon as he dunks the ball, they're like, all right, we like this guy. We like this wolf guy. He's good. At least he's our wolf.
LeBron James's high school games were on ESPN. You're telling me that this would have been featured on some sports channels? I don't know if ESPN was around. I think it was. Just not everyone had it. But yeah, there would have been news outlets. Some cops would have come by, reporters, probably science, the government.
Like, holy shit. It just fully blended in with the whole chemistry of the entire city. It didn't mean anything.
So one thing too that goes unnoticed is obviously this. Now there's a stunt double because that's not Michael J. Fox really playing basketball. I think I read somewhere it was like a college kid who never quite went pro. So you know, just they cast him. And but also no one notices that the wolf goes from being 5'5" to about 6'6", 6'1". Now he's not a little 5'5". He's not massive. He's not Manu Bol, but he's at least 6 foot at that point.
Yes. Well, he's got padded shoes, you know.
Right.
He's got the old Ron DeSantis wedges going on.
So this is where I think the movie, what kind of timeless story. he now loses himself in this, being cool. A great 80s movie. One of my favorite 80s movies, maybe one of the best 80s movies there is. And let's time out. Let's talk about that real quick. The 80s is a horrible decade for movies. It's complete shit. It's an awful decade. And most people will say the best decade ever for movies is the 70s. And that's because what happened was for the entire life of movies, the stars were the producers. That was the big stars. Louis B. Mayer presents. And you got a guy with money, and the director is for hire, the actors are for hire, the writers for hire. It's that producer's movie. There was this weird shift in the 70s where now the director became the star. Francis Ford Coppola, Martin Scorsese, Michael Cimino, Paul Schrader, all these people, right? Big time directors. And they, Walter Hill, they all become the stars. And now it's auteurs, right? Guys who are writing, directing. It's more of an art form. So the 70s is an amazing decade for movies. The 90s is an amazing decade for movies. The 80s is a horrible fucking decade for movies. And that's why when you really think of 80s movies that are quote unquote classic, it's teen movies, right? It's fucking back. It's kid movies, right? The Goonies and Ferris Bueller. It's John Hughes' decade for a fucking reason, because every other movie sucked. So one of my favorites is, and you should watch this one, actually holds up. Can't Buy Me Love. Great movie. It stars, what's the young Patrick, he was later on in Grey's Anatomy, McSteamy, McDreamy, one of those. I don't know. Anyway, he's in it. And the story there goes is he saves up all his money. He cuts grass in the neighborhood. He saves up all his money. He's a nerd. And he's going to buy that $1,000 telescope, right? As he goes to buy it, the girl he's had a crush on forever, the hot girl, the cool girl in school, she needs the money. He gives it to her in exchange for, you date me for 2 weeks and make me popular. And it works. She makes him popular. He then, of course, loses sight of himself, loses all his friends, becomes an asshole. At the end, realizes, I don't need to be the cool guy. I was already comfortable with who I am, right? Boom. That's the same thing as Teen Wolf. It's the same thing. He becomes the wolf for a while, really loves that cool guy thing, and at the end realizes, no, I'm better off as Scott, you know. And I think it's timeless. I love that part of it. Now, along the way, he makes some crazy mistakes. What do you think of the van surfing?
Highly dangerous, but seemed pretty fun. You know, for an 80s movie, I think that fits the bill. Honestly, I didn't have a problem with that. It seemed like that was like a classic 80s movie thing. Like, I had no problem with that.
You know what made me laugh about it? And I know you have seen this movie being such a big football fan. Have you ever seen The Program?
Long time ago.
Okay. So The Program, I saw that in the theater. I'm not sure when that came out. I'm going to ballpark it around 93. Between 92 and 94, because I was in high school. And when I saw in the theater, the scene was still in there, but it eventually got cut out, where there's a scene where they go and they lay down in the middle of the road. All the players, they're drunk, they're partying, they lay down in the middle of the street and cars are driving by. Well, of course, some idiots see this, they try it, they get killed. So in all the future releases of that film, including VHS and DVD and cable, that scene's cut out. How the fuck has this scene survived? You know there were some shitheads trying this, man. Like, dangerous as shit.
Number one, depends on how fast you go. But also, I will say we did truck jousting when we were in high school because it was right around the Jackass days. And so we would copy all the Jackass stuff that was on TV. And we did, one guy stands in the back of a pickup truck. One guy stands in the back of another pickup truck. You drive them at each other. They've got these sticks. They're trying to joust and knock each other down. Also highly dangerous.
Yeah. Off the truck?
And I mean, you're in the bed. So maybe you knock down and you knock them down in the bed. I don't know. But what the fuck? Yeah. These are high school kids, man. This is what kids do.
Did you grow up in West Canaan, Texas?
This is pretty insane. Much. Yeah. Nothing to do in my town.
See, that stuff all seems foreign to me because I grew up in the city. I grew up in the Bronx for the most part. And so
it didn't bother me at all to watch that.
Yeah, we didn't do anything.
I thought it was like hyperbolic. You know, it's like obviously you can't stand on top of a moving van like that and not just get completely thrown off. But it didn't bother me that was like what they did for fun.
You know, that's an interesting thing. I was actually talking to my wife about this in raising kids, because I have my oldest now as a teenager. And it occurred to me, I think that the line in the sand between crazy teenagers doing crazy shit and not is whether or not you live in a driving culture. Like I drank, I partied, but we walked everywhere when I was going up. We walked. So A, I wasn't driving drunk. My friends weren't driving drunk. We sure as fuck weren't jousting or doing van surfing because we walked. And if you didn't walk, you got on a train. So I just feel like that's the problem. When you combine cars and nothing else to do, it's a recipe for fucking disaster.
Yep. You don't know nothing else to do though. Not where you grew up and not where your kids are growing up now. There's far too much to do in both of those places. Where I grew up, nothing to do. That's the difference.
Interesting. That was actually a regret. We're getting way off topic now. That's one of my regrets in college choice. I shouldn't really gone to college right after high school anyway, because I didn't crack a book in high school. The reason I got into college is because, like, my SAT scores and stuff. But I ultimately went to Boston University, which doesn't even have a campus. Like, you're just in the city of Boston, right? Boston College does. Boston University does not. So there's no girls had any interest in me. There was shit to do. This whole city out there. Whereas my buddies went to these schools like out in the sticks, like upstate New York, where all there was to do was drink and hook up. That was it. And I remember thinking, damn, I should have gone to one of those drink and hook up schools. All right. Speaking of hooking up, Michael J. Fox joins. He decides to be in the school play. And the
two-person school
Pamela, the sex scene. That's just
the two-person school play. Like,
apparently.
There's one director who's like basically like making advances on Pamela, you know. And then you've got two total actors. They want him to be the wolf. She went from like disgusted by this guy to wants to bang him, but only if he's the wolf. Like, again, plot holes everywhere.
What? But that's common. I mean, think about that, though. Anyone who becomes super successful or cool, women are going to. There is a caliber of woman that a $45,000 a year guy can't make, a $5 million a year guy could get her times three and all her friends, right? That's just human nature, right? I mean, if you have money or you're successful, he was cool. Of course she's going to be interested in him now. He's cool. I think you're wrong on that. If the coolest guy in school has zits and he's fat, still the coolest guy in school, and he's going to get chicks.
I guess.
I don't know that she bones him that way in the dressing room, but rewatching again, it's now a 47-year-old who's raising kids. I'm like, what's going on? And you're right, that teacher, overacting, or wolf man, wolf out, you know, it's like, what's wrong with you, fella?
He had problems. Yeah, I agree. She wanted him to be the wolf, though. She wanted to bone the wolf specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, if it upped his basketball game that much, sure, it's probably upped his libido, his skills in the bedroom. We go to the final game. So Scott decides doesn't want to be the wolf. He's going to do it on his own. No tricks, a la Rocky II. Because if you know the story of Rocky II, the big thing was Mick was training him, you're going to not fight southpaw. Apollo's expecting a southpaw. You're going to learn to fight righty. So Rocky's entire training is fighting righty. Goes into the fight, and the plan is you're going to fight him righty, and then once you wear him down, switch back to southpaw, and now you're going to throw off his game. And when that moment comes, Rocky tells Mick, no tricks. I'm going to stay fighting righty. No tricks this time. I just want to beat him. If I'm going to beat him, I'm going to beat him, but no tricks. I like this. He's like, he's not using the trick. He's going to go out there and do it. He walks into the game late. I think the first quarter is already done. They're down like 22 something. They're losing by like 17 points or some crazy math. I don't know. Comes into the game. This game is so frustrating to me because, again, Michael J. Fox isn't a great basketball player. None of them are. But when good things do happen, there's actually one point. You got to go back and watch this. This drove me nuts. I've seen this move 100 times. Someone goes down and scores. I can't remember if it's Scott or Chubby, but they score. Michael J. Fox's response to them scoring is he jumps into Chubby's arms to celebrate. Meanwhile, an opposing player is on a lone fast break and just scores an easy layup because Michael J. Fox is in the arms of Chubby. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? It's a fast break.
Again, if you want to pick apart the technical basketball of this movie, you're going to hate it. You're just going to hate it. You've got, like, I can suspend disbelief for most of that, other than the fact that they lost by like 50 to this team in the beginning of the season. They were already losing by 20. They didn't get any better, you know? And he's not the wolf. So why are they all of a sudden going to win this game at the end?
Can I remind you of a story of a soccer coach whose team got his ass handed to him in the first game of the season? And in the championship, they played that same team and win. Does that sound familiar to you, Chubby?
Sure as hell does. A couple of major differences. One, team got better. Two of our star players showed up for that game that were not in the first game.
Fair enough. All right. Yeah. But, okay, so final game, of course, they win. Two things here. One, when he's taking those final shots, one thing I never noticed it before until I watched it this time to get ready for this podcast, is why is what's the bad guy's name again? Kip? Ken? Rip?
Mick.
Mick, that's it. Why is Mick allowed to stand underneath the net? You notice he's facing. Yeah. He's facing Scott. No referee's allowing that shit. Because I think it's a technical foul, right? So the Something. Yeah. I know that all the players are off the court except for Scott and Mick, who's apparently allowed to stand 4 feet in front of him, staring at him, which that's not allowed. But I love – all right, so Scott hits the two free throws, wins the game, violently shoves Pamela away to make out with Booth. Now, here's – there is no dude in the world that's pushing Pamela away in exchange for Booth, no matter how much of a bitch Pamela is. I think you're going to give Pamela the kiss. And then maybe Booth too. I don't know. But I always
had an issue with that. Yeah, why not? Well, my biggest issue with Booth, and you've got – it sounds like much bigger issues, but my biggest issue was – that she stuck around and just got completely walked all over by him as he went through this change and was kind of like that there all along girl, but never made him pay for it at all, you know? And that's usually, I feel like in those stories, there's some like he's got to kind of find his way back to understanding that it was right in front of his face the whole time. And like, that never happens. She just immediately was like, oh, you want to make out with me? Okay. I'm still here. Like, I don't know.
You know, the whole thing with Booth is strange. We're going to get to the cast. So let's hold off on some of that. Let's go through it. So obviously we've kind of broken down the story. There's issues there. I get it. I still think it's more fun. I think the cast is great. So let's go through. I got my IMDb in front of me. I'm just going to go through it real quick. I think Michael J. Fox is great in the movie. I think he's fun. He's likable. He's a horrible basketball player, but come on. I've seen so many sports movies where the actor's clearly for shit. I mean, this is a comment. Apparently, again, they filmed the movie really fast. They didn't have a lot of time to prep. Apparently, there's a lot of footage that the director, Rod Daniels, said it would be really, really embarrassing for everyone involved if we released this basketball footage. Just really shitty.
Can you imagine how many shots were airballed and bricked?
If you go back and watch the game, I mean, they used the same four successful shots about 85 times. You see the same dunks and layups. How many times did that ball roll around the rim?
You know, we've bouncing seen off and back on and back in the rim. Yep.
Same thing with the van surfing. Same shots. Yeah. What's funny to me is you don't know unless you live there, but I love these movies that take place. This one took place in Nebraska, they mentioned, but that are unapologetically Southern California. So this movie was clearly filmed in North Hollywood / Van Nuys, which is right where I lived. That whole van surfing scene with the wolf doing it, I mean, I lived maybe 2 minutes from there. I love that. It's just like, wow, unapologetically, this is Southern California. It's just the same four businesses all the time, but yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, Michael J. Fox, I think he's a winner. Do you agree or disagree? I love him in this movie.
I agree.
I like the dad in it too. James Hampton, who died about 2 or 3 years ago as Harold Howard. I like him too. He's got such a fatherly tone to him.
Yeah, really good. I like him too. I'm good with him. He stuck up for him at the end there when he went over to Principal Thorne. Yep. Made him piss himself again.
Made him piss himself. That's a trope that they bring back in the sequel, Teen Wolf 2, which I'm going to have to make you watch that one too. I'll bring you back for a Teen Wolf 2.
Okay.
You know, I'm making you a better man. I'm not having you watch 70s classics. I'm having you watch Teen Wolf 2. All right, I'm going to skip Susan Ercity. She was Booth. I love Jerry. I think the best actor in this movie, to me, is Styles. Jerry Levine plays Styles. I think he's great. He's a classic 80s character.
Yeah, he was great. And he's a classic best friend character who's a little off, kind of like Cameron, you know, with Ferris Bueller. Like, he's eccentric. And he pulls the main character along and has him do things. That scene where they're looking through the garage for the stash and he turns into a wolf and he sniffs it out and he kind of reveals he's a wolf and all that.
Probably
a little more conversation maybe could have been happened there, but
the first thing Styles says to him when he turns sees a wolf, he takes it and he goes, "You're beautiful." Because I think he sees the money making opportunity.
This guy,
he's a get rich quick guy.
Yeah, I loved him with the merch and the van and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Then they had that weird one thing that I can't wrap my brain around was that Lewis character. And they don't resolve this one either. Lewis was Styles' little buddy who kind of looked like Styles, but a shorter version of him. He's the one who gets scared of the wolf. Like, they're friends and he's scared of him. And
I can't even remember that character.
Yeah, he's just the little guy who hangs out with Scott and Styles. When they go to get beer, he's like the third guy. They don't give him much to do. He kind of looks like a combination of the two, so it doesn't stand out. I'm not shocked you don't remember him. He's not very memorable. But he's frightened by the wolf, and they never resolve that. There's never like a, so that was kind of messed up.
Yeah,
I love the character of Pamela and the actress playing her. She didn't do shit after this. I'm going to look her up now. You would have thought she'd have a bigger career. She has 9 credits to her name, dude. Teen Wolf was her first, and her last was in 1997's The Burning Zone, which was apparently a TV show that no one watched. She did a couple of episodes of Highway to Heaven. She did an episode of Charles in Charge. She did a 1988 movie called Cheerleader Camp.
When your IMDb picture is you on the stage in Teen Wolf, that's usually a sign that you don't have a whole lot going on after that.
That's fair. Yeah, so but I liked her, and I'll tell you why I liked her as opposed to Booth. We'll get back to Booth in a second. I'll actually bring this up when we talk about Booth, because there's a critical difference. Mick, I thought he was too old. I think most of the cast was too old. But I like him as a bad guy. I think he works. He seems scary. Like, there's some bad guys that you can kind of laugh at. I wouldn't have messed with that dude, quite frankly. He looks like he's 6'3",
chiseled, and was 30 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't get to meet his kids in the movie, but I'm guessing he had a family somewhere.
Yeah, he did. They were also 6'3".
Yeah. You can tell he's well-versed in taking Bic pens and making prison tattoos. He's just scary as shit. One of the standout roles to me was the coach. Coach Finstock, Jay Tarsus. Love him.
Completely agree. His character was fantastic and was the most outrageous to me. With the comments and the way he was portrayed, I thought it was fantastic.
So originally, you know who was originally reading for that role was the actor that played Scott's dad. He was up for that role. And in reading with Michael J. Fox, it was Michael J. Fox that said, hey, hold on a second. Try reading as my dad. And then they went with that, which I think is a much better fit. But IMDb always keeps the quotes on here. One of my favorite quotes ever, Coach Finstock, I'm sure you remember this scene. There are three rules that I live by. Never get less than 12 hours sleep. Never play cards with a guy who has the same first name as a city, and never get involved with a woman with a tattoo of a dagger on her body. Now, you stick to that, and everything else is cream cheese.
Best line of the movie.
Best line of the movie. Easy. So that's the main cast. You know, Chubby went on to have a big career. You know what Chubby did that was huge was the actor. He appeared in two more things, but the big one being Ferris Bueller or Pee-wee's Big Adventure. He was the rich kid that stole Pee-wee's bike. So that was like the big role for him. I think he also had an appearance, like a famous line in Naked Gun. I think that was it. But that's the main cast there. So let's get to Susan Ercity. So Susan Ercity played Booth. I think there's a lot we could change the story. You complained about the story, and I've laughed along with you. You're right. You're not wrong. I get it. But I think the story works, right? I think the cast works. I think the timing works. I think this movie would have a much better legacy if you made one critical change, and it's the character of Booth. And I'll tell you why. I think all the ancillary characters are great. I think the dad is great. The friends are great. Styles is great. Chubby, it all works. The bad guy, it works. Pamela, you don't need her to be a name actress. You don't. She's perfect. She's perfect as the bitch. Nothing likable, nothing redeeming about her, which I guess does make sense when Michael J. Fox doesn't kiss her, because there's nothing redeeming about her. There was oftentimes the bad character, you kind of see their humanity at the end, not her. She's a piece of shit. She's probably going to marry Mick, have kids, and they're going to be pieces of shit. And she's just going to be a piece of shit her whole life. She didn't learn anything from all this, right? Booth, on the other hand, that's an actor that you need a name actor. I think if you had a name actress in this role, it's a bigger movie, the legacy is better. Booth is a character bugs me. So let's talk about the name, Booth. Okay, I get it. It's probably, here's the thing. It's probably, her name was Beth, but she couldn't pronounce Beth as a baby. She called it Booth. And her parents thought that was cute. They indulged her and they called her Booth and it stuck, right? Some story like that, right?
Right.
I have a friend named Bink. His name is Brent. But when he was little, his baby sister couldn't say Brent. She should say Bink. So it stuck. And you know why I'm okay with the name Bink on this big 190-pound guy? Because there's a fucking explanation. I know why I'm calling him Bink. So I can resolve myself to the fact. They never explained Booth. Now, apparently her name is Lisa. Lisa fucking, I don't know. If you Wikipedia the character of Booth, it gives you Lisa with some Italian last name. That's not in the movie. There's no explanation for Booth. So I don't like that. What's going on with her haircut? They mentioned Scott's $6 haircut. I would argue that hers is not even a $6 haircut. It's not.
She has bad hair. I'm not going to lie.
She has bad hair. She's just bad hair. She's bland. I remember when the werewolf showed – when Scott, not the wolf. When Scott shows up at the stage, he's carrying all the hardware store shit. Cans of paint, that red and white – I guess it looks like wallpaper, whatever the fuck it is, and he's dropping it. That wallpaper is more memorable to me than Booth's face. Like, she just brings nothing to the role.
So
nothing.
I think she's the idea, of course, is the girl next door vibe, and the friend who's like kind of a tomboy, but actually could be cute. Like, she's the redeemable, could be cute kind of thing. You're right. The hair's awful, but I honestly chalk that up to just being the 80s. I don't know if that's awful or not. It all looks awful to me. No, I didn't watch a lot of 80s movies, you know? So
She should have been cuter. You brought this up earlier, right? The characters like they did in the 90s. They were doing this in the 80s too. You take their glasses off and all of a sudden they're cute. They should have gone with one of those. This should have been a prettier girl. Not that she's not pretty. I'm not making it about that. But there was nothing that stand out to her. There should have been some kind of reveal where it's like, oh, wow, she was there the whole time and I didn't see it. History's not been kind to the actress, but it's also not been kind to the name Boof. I have this written down here. The Urban Dictionary defines Boof, and this is true, to abuse any licit or illicit drug via insertion into one's rectum.
Oh.
Dude, Boof is now slang for ingesting drugs through your ass. That's what boofing means. And in prison, it gets worse. In prison, boofing is when you hide something up your ass. So thank you, universe. That's what boofing means now. That's Boof. That's who she is. I think that's perfect.
That seems pretty fitting then. Yeah, right?
So what I'm going to do over my next couple of episodes is, again, I'm writing this book now, and I think there's certain categories I should know a Boof. I think that it should. I think if you had a name actress in that role, I don't think you need a name actor as the dad or the coach. I don't think the friends need to be name actors. I think Pamela is even better off not being a name actor because I don't think a lot of actresses would have wanted the role. It's just bitch, nothing likable. I think a lot of actors, women maybe more so than men, want to be likable, right? Boof is a what an opportunity. You're like the third, fourth lead in a big movie in 1985, starring probably one of the biggest male stars in 1985. That was such a missed opportunity. And all these categories, and we're not going to get into it today, but like I've got these categories I've written down. How about Blast from the Past? Why not take a former actor? Like someone who's had been famous in the late 70s, early 80s, the career was on the downslide, put them in there. What about like similar vibe, but better? There were so many brunette actresses, name recognition actresses. There's names. Then there's also actors that were this close to being superstars. We don't get them. We don't get like a young Sandra Bullock, a young Lori Loughlin, who went on to be Aunt Becky. Like imagine that.
True.
Because that's the legacy of the movie. Imagine if I'm just using this as an example. Sandra Bullock's Speed comes out in 1994, right? No one knew her. She'd been a working actor, but no one knew her. I think her biggest project up to that point had been Time Cop. Which no one, but she wasn't. It was Snipes and Stallone, right? That was her biggest role, and she was in a movie called Love Potion Number 9, which ties in what we talked about before, which was a pile of shit movie that got a re-release on VHS after Speed came out, right? But imagine if Speed comes out and everyone's like, "Oh my god, it's Boof from Teen Wolf," and now she's in this killer movie. Now people are renting Teen Wolf more. Or what if the movie came out, it's Melissa Gilbert from Little House. Wow, Melissa Gilbert, I haven't seen her since Little House on the Prairie. And now she's in this movie, Teen Wolf. Let's go rent it. Let's watch it. That's where they missed it. The character sucks. The actor sucks. Missed opportunity. So I'm going to be spending my next couple podcasts, lucky you, world, talking about Boof and identifying actresses that I think could have been in the role. There's even diversity. There's black actresses that I've identified. Stephanie Simonetta, I think I'm pronouncing her name right, but she was, she was Apollonia. She was Michael Corleone's first wife in The Godfather, right? No one had seen her since The Godfather. She's in that age range. We slap her in there, quick rewrite, right? Quick rewrite. Just, hey, Boof, when your family moved here from Italy all those years ago and you have to explain why her English is so shitty, you put her in there and hey, it's the girl from Godfather that got blown up in the car. She's back. That elevates the movie, and it goes from being a hardly remembered movie to a well-remembered movie. It goes from maybe being the 27th biggest film that year, maybe cracks the top 20. Maybe it's like number 19. I don't know.
Yeah, all I got out of that was, look out, world, there's going to be full episodes of – there's more. Like, that's just cracking the surface of your displeasure over this casting.
If you're interested, listeners, I start off – I basically went – women. I identify – here's my – so. Susan Ercity was born in 1957. I think it's too old, but it is what it is. So I identified actresses born between 55 and 65. All actresses born between 55 and 65, went through them all, right? Identified them all. And then I was like, I broke them into categories. And I'm going through my notes here, so excuse me. Categories such as Blast from the Past, Future Awards Darlings, right? Like, what if they got like a young, Laura Linney or something like that before they become awards, right? Future superstars, diversity. Fuck it. There's things that's like, fuck it, pair. The movie costs $1 million. Let's make it $1.2 million. We'll give $1 million to Deborah Winger. We'll spend $200,000 filming this piece of shit movie. Just fuck it, pair. Then there's actually scarier than the wolf, right? What if we get some action? Like, holy shit, scare the world. Then this category is similar but better. Like, same vibe as Boof, but better. Young Daphne Zuniga, who would later on be in Melrose Place, right? She's way better. I'm trying to think. I want to look for all my lists here.
Listener, what you're not seeing right now that I am seeing, there are notepads of pages being flipped currently with lists and lists and lists of people that have been identified as better fits for this role.
Yeah, like Blast from the Past. What if we look at a Marie Osmond, Linda Blair, Dana Plato coming off of Different Strokes, right? Erin Murphy, Simonetta Stefanelli. That's the one I was talking about from Godfather. Future Pedigree, young Julianne Moore, Holly Hunter, Helen Hunt, Annette Bening, right? They were all going to be awards darlings at some point. Then there's the Glasses Off Award. Wow, I didn't know she was pretty. So her glasses came off. Crystal Bernard, Julie Warner, Calista Flockhart, Kira Sedgwick, right? Future superstar, Sarah Jessica Parker, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Meg Ryan, Kim Wayans, Paula Abdul. Diversity. Rosie Perez, young Michelle Yeoh. Michelle Yeoh just won an Oscar, right? Just like she won an Oscar the same year as the kid from Goonies. Imagine if it was, wow, the kid from Goonies and the girl from Teen Wolf, and they both won Oscars. Then people are renting Teen Wolf again. You see, how do I know Michelle Yeoh? She was Boof. How do I know the other Asian kid? Oh, he was Goonies, or he was in the, you know, I don't remember his name. But like, see my point? And then it gives new life to Teen Wolf. Susan Ercity is not giving new life to anything, including Susan Ercity. She's not doing anything. She's not helping anybody. What else? Scarier Than the Wolf, Sean Young, Judy Tenuta, Amanda Plummer. She's from, Amanda Plummer's in the opening scene of Pulp Fiction, right? And if you fucking pricks move, and I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you. Imagine if young Amanda Plummer, now again, Scarier Than the Wolf, but I've got all these things. I start off with over 400 actresses. I've narrowed it down. That's the focus of the podcast the next few days, next few episodes. That is it. It's tiring being me.
I can imagine.
I wish I could make this go away.
It's a little tiring even trying to keep up with you, honestly.
So
I will say,
as we wrap this caveat, up.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll just let you wrap it up.
Oh, no. What do you got? Say something.
The one caveat I was going to say is if she were most of those people, she may not have been overlooked in the first place. Like maybe she needs to be the most average looking person for her to have been so quickly dispensed. Although Pamela was supposedly the bombshell for her to, number one, maybe it ties together the idea, the complaint that I have, that she latches on and doesn't care if he goes after Pamela or comes back to her. He's her only ticket anyway. Maybe it solidifies that, the fact that she's not better looking or, I don't know, better.
Well, and again, position. It's not all about looks. There's two ways to look at it. First of all, I'm also talking about the actress's legacy. Because, I mean, so often it's like, oh, how do I know the person? Oh, they were Boof. Like, you're reading an article about him. You may know her as Boof, but now you know her as Dr. So-and-so on ER, right? Maura Tierney, by the way. That she would have been a good... But see what I'm saying? So, like, I think this actor, the role should have been a name actor that kept reminding people, because the only name actor in the movie really is Michael J. Fox. I think you need two. And she's ultimately the love interest, right? She's ultimately the one he connects with.
True.
And I think she was just a little too bland. I'm not saying put fucking, Michelle Pfeiffer in the role. I'm saying, you know, and again, you can put a prettier girl in there, not even prettier. I'm not saying pretty because that sounds sexist. Someone with just a hint of pizzazz, like pizzazz, not prettier, some pizzazz. She is Boof and she's forgettable. What if Boof had a little bit of zest? And again, if you get someone who's got too much pizzazz or too pretty, give him a shitty haircut, slap some glasses on him, put her in some overalls. I don't know, but it can be done. In the history of movies, we've taken beautiful people and made them not look so great. I mean,
fair point. I can't wait for episode 2 of Fantajack.
So, final thoughts. You've now seen Teen Wolf. Glad you saw it. Complete waste of time. What do you think?
I'm glad I saw it from its place in the history of movies, you know, and pop culture. And now I can say that I've seen it and I can make references to it. And it had its redeeming qualities. The coach, as we mentioned, redeeming quality. Michael J. Fox, I love. I love him in anything. So always good. So I don't regret having seen it. Certainly. Glad that I caught up on some of the old pop culture.
Good. So if in a month from now you get a text from me, hey man, watch Teen Wolf 2. Are you going to ignore the text, respond? Are you going to pack your family up and move 3 states away?
New phone, who dis? Yeah, I don't know. I've heard so much trash talk about Teen Wolf 2 through the Smartless podcast with Jason Bateman and Will Arnett and the jokes they've made about that. I feel like I got to check it out if you're going to do this again.
All right. What we'll do is, well, after I go through my Booth tirade and I've got some Charles Bronson, I got to do. I think I'll bring you back. We'll do Teen Wolf 2. And then other things I plan on doing in the book. I mean, I really plan on focusing on some stuff that really bugs me about Terminator. Arguably the best casting job in the history of casting movies, which is Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I think it's like 5 or 6 Oscar winners. And they were all unknowns. Like, what casting writer? I want to talk about a lot of issues with The Cosby Show. There are a lot of issues with the, and I love The Cosby Show growing up, but there's a lot of dark stuff going on there. And then also the 80s, all these sitcoms, we were raised by some scumbags. There are some under the table scumbags that we may or may not have been exposed. I want to talk about that. But this has been S5, E1 of Fanacek. Chubby, thank you for joining me. It's nice having you back on the pod. You haven't done this in a while. Pleasure. And I've seen you and everyone else do me a quick favor. Stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacek.